CF United, the premier Cold Fusion Conference by TerraTech Programming. Created by developers for developers.
Okay, good morning, everyone. You're in the right place if that looks familiar to you. Recursive functions in CF, yeah? You're in the right room? Some nods, just to make sure I know that people are awake. You've had your coffee. Michael Smith said this morning that a program's too complex if you can't explain it over the telephone. Well, not this stuff. This stuff's going to be different. This stuff's going to take a little more brain power, so definitely want to pay attention here. Quick question there. Who has ever written a recursive function before in CF? Show of hands. Handful. Is that because you had any education prior to, or did you just give it a go and hope it works out right? All right. The give it a go crowd. Okay. Well, let me go ahead and give you a quick introduction. My name is Andrew Schwab. I am a CTO for IEXP Fusion Docs. These are a little bit short, so I'm going to have to hunch over here. IEXP Fusion Docs, that is our company website. By the way, if you want to know anything at all about our company, you had one of these inside your backpacks, which is all sorts of really interesting stuff that you can read later. One last call for the review sheets. Please make sure everyone has one. This is how we make sure that this is serving your needs better. This is how we make sure that what you need next year is more involved, less involved, etc. Please make sure you fill one out. Plus, I'm trying to win that contest or whatever. Okay. Some quick background on me. I've worked with Cold Fusion since version 3. It's been a while. I really like the newer versions because they're a whole lot more stable and can do some pretty cool things. Back then, what we thought we could do was pretty cool, but it's pretty nifty now. So right now, I'm the lead engineer for FusionDocs document management platform. If anyone knows anything about document management at all, you know that there's not many of them written in Cold Fusion. We engineered that from the ground up to be developer-friendly, so it's definitely something of interest in case you have a need in the future. So assumptions for today's talk. You need to know what you're doing a little bit with CFML in order to comprehend what we're talking about. We're going to start at a conceptual basis here, but we're going to go through some really practical examples of something that'll be, I'm sure, something you can use. But you need to know a little bit about CFML. You have to know what a UDF is. You have to have coded a CFC before. All right, these are some basic things that you need to make sure you understand. If not, you're going to be able to look at these materials later, but you should really kind of study up on those things because we're not going through the mechanics of those nuts and bolts. Hey, let's get things off to a good start. What's in the book is not accurate. So you want to write down that URL, which is my blog, and the code is there. Not exactly at 12:01 this morning, like the rest of the CF stuff, but my code is there. You can download a copy of everything, including a backup of the SQL database that the examples run off of. So you will have all the code, the custom tags, as well as this presentation file as well. And it is there right now. I'll give you a minute to write that down. As I mentioned a minute ago, this is not one of those topics that you can just kind of have a casual conversation and be able to get all the details of. If you don't understand what you're doing, it can be dangerous. So we're going to go through concept first and then some practical applications. Everyone got down the URL? All right, what this presentation is, I just kind of stated that. It is about recursion in CF. Recursion is not something specific to Cold Fusion. I'm not sure how many people here have had prior programming experience in a language other than Cold Fusion before you started there. But recursion has been around for a long time. We're talking about the concept, and then we're talking about how to apply that to Cold Fusion. This is not a discussion about performance optimization. Okay, let's just get that clear. We're not going to talk about how to make sure that your recursive functions run super fast. All right, that's different. All right, that takes planning on your part, that takes testing, that takes tweaking. There are a bunch of those other types of talks elsewhere. All right, learn the concepts here, apply the testing and performance optimization somewhere else. A And just that disclaimer at the bottom, they are not extraordinarily fast. All right, just understand that going into it. This is a technique for how you accomplish certain tasks that require recursion. This is not about performance. To start out with recursion, a recursive function is a function that calls itself. Okay, if you've never had a need for it, you're probably asking yourself, why bother? I don't understand the concept. It's not your, you know, line one, then line two, then line three type of execution. This is a function that knows that it needs to call itself repeatedly to get a job done. The concept behind this is that you take a large problem, you break it into chunks, and you do just the piece you know, and you offload the rest to another call of that function to do the work for you. As a result, you can have multiple what are called iterations of a function. It'll call itself multiple times until the task is done, and then it all rolls back up and gives you the end result. That's what we're talking about here. The key for when you want to use recursion is when you don't know how many times a function is going to run. This is the absolute prerequisite of why you should even bother writing a recursive function. One of the examples we're going to go through here is going to show you pretty much a textbook example. If you've ever had a computer science textbook from college or something like that, this is something that's going to be shown in there, although it'll be written in C or Java. But the idea behind here is if you can't calculate without a doubt how many times you need to loop over something, recursion is a pretty good idea to look at. So an example here is looking for prime numbers. Okay, if you take a flat-out number, 5,400, right, and you have to find out if it's divisible by anything less than that, okay? Not, I don't know, can anyone else, can you calculate how many tests you have to do for that? It's not exactly easy in the mind to come up with that number. So it's a good example of what you might want to use recursion for. Scanning a directory and subdirectories, that's a really practical example that I'm sure you'll probably have to touch on at some point. And good news, we've got an example of that fully working here that we'll show you. And then, like I said, on that blog site, you can download code that does that exact thing. So it's going to be very helpful, helpful and hopeful. It works. Okay, I'm really going to hammer the methodology down here really well because every other example we have here is going to focus very deeply on the methodology. The methodology is know what problems you can solve. Identify what the facts are, the basic conclusions that you can identify from the problem you're trying to accomplish. If anything else is based on that, you probably want to delegate it, offload it to another call of your function to make sure that you're only focusing on just the bare minimum piece you want. So, this is pseudocode. This is the general concept, okay? Again, concept, because like I said, this is not originated in CF. It's originated in every other language that preceded Cold Fusion. So understand the concept, and then you can start to apply this to your own functions. So, to solve my problem, the first thing I do is check to see if I know how to handle at least part of my problem. If I don't, you're done, okay? If you know how to handle part of that problem, you handle it. Then next, you can check to see whether or not the problem is completely solved. If so, you're done. The next thing is you would return another call of the same function with whatever the remainder is that you need to get done. Okay? The concept here of scanning directories and subdirectories are, I have a starting place. I have one directory with files in it. I'm going to process that relatively straightforward with a CF directory, get a list of files, and do your CF file type thing. All right? When you're done with that, do you know how many subdirectories there are? You probably may not, all right? But if you don't, that's a real challenge, okay? Then you would offload that to another call of the same function that would look for subdirectories, okay? Concept is sound, methodology, people are getting it. I know it's early. Give me a break here. Just some nods and just make sure you understand what you're talking about. Okay, factorial. This is the textbook example. I know it's boring, but we're going to go through it anyway. The concept of factorial is 4 factorial, or 4 exclamation mark denotation, is 4 times 3 times 2 times 1. Okay? So 500 factorial is 500 times 499 times et cetera, until 1. Okay? So from that example, there are only a couple basic things that hopefully off the top of your head, unless you're a math genius, all right, off the top of your head that you can come up with that are facts. 1 factorial is 1. 2 factorial is, okay, you start to go beyond there, you have to start to do the math. I know it's elementary math for the first couple of years, but you have to start to do the math to be able to add it all up. So we know we can start with the basics, okay? 1 and 2, yeah, pretty easy to understand. We can call those facts and move forward with the recursive call. Okay, so we're going to take a break from that real quick, and we're going to hop over to some code, because I know you're tired of seeing PowerPoints already, right? Oh, just the first day. You're going to see a lot more PowerPoints. Okay, first of all, what are we up against? Here is a function that is not using recursion. Okay, now real quick, you looked at it, you had a couple seconds. Now, what does it do? Right, at a quick glance, okay, one of the things you'll notice about recursive functions are that whenever you design them properly, it's very easy to see the logic of what's going on. It's very easy to spot, okay? If you have too much going on, and it's not easy to hand read through that code, you may not be breaking it down right. Okay? Just a little methodology tip here. All right. So here's the function again, and we're not doing it recursively. What we're doing here is we're saying we're going to pass in a number.
Can we increase the screen size a little bit?
The font size? Yeah. How do we do that? Anybody else still use HomeSite? So where's the font setting? Is this it? Yeah. How often do I do this? Too big? Or was that just right? How about that? Better? Okay. So, this function right here, and again, this is an example of what not to do in this scenario, so don't delve too deeply on this example. We're passing in a number, and we're creating a new variable, which is what we're going to return. And now we're going to loop while that number that we passed in is greater than 1. Okay? And then we're going to multiply that by the previous number and return it. Okay? If you're a seasoned programmer, this is not horrific. Okay? But if you're getting started out, it's not intuitive to read. Okay? And so if we take a look at that when it runs, the factorial of 8 is that. Okay, pretty straightforward. Now let's take a look at one that is recursive. Now, does this look a little more simple? If it's 1, return it. If it's not, then return n times factorial of n minus 1. That's easier to read, yeah? Yeah, a little bit easier to comprehend. So it's doing the exact same thing here. We're calling factorial of 8, and it's saying, is 8 equal to 1? No. Well, then return 8 times 8 minus 1. And now that's going to run again. It's going to say, is 7 1? No. Then return 7 times 7 minus 1, and so on, and so on, and so on. You guys following? Little head bob, nod. Yeah. This is as simple as it gets, so make sure you understand this, all right? This is very simple, but this is the baseline of what we're talking about, all right? So there's the concept. Make sure you're okay with it. We're moving on. It's never going to be that simple again. Okay?
I see how the first 56 got returned.
What's that?
I see you're returning the 7. Where's the 56
store? Well, what's going to happen here is it's going to run the first function, and then before this function's done, it's going to run a child function. And then before that's done, it's going to run a child function. And then whenever the last one's done, it goes blip, 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 all the way back and folds them all up and gives you the answer. Okay? So what's happening here is we're literally saying we're passing in 8. It's going to return 8 times 7 factorial. That's exactly what's going on here. Okay? And it's going to return 7 factorial by saying 7 times 6 factorial. And so on. Okay? Each time it calls this function again, it's called an iteration. Okay? Excellent. No. Okay, everyone got factorial. You feel good with that, right? Okay, before we go on to any other more complex examples, what we're looking at here is the warnings and gotchas. Performance will suffer. It says can, but it will. Performance will suffer if your function is not designed and tested well. Okay? Only pass what you need to each of your function calls. All right? Sometimes it's going to be difficult when we look at the ColdFusion examples. But really the concept is, if you're going to have multiple functions calling themselves, you want your overhead to be as little as possible for each one of those functions. That's logical. So anti-bloat your code. Okay? It's also very easy to cause an infinite loop. This is extraordinarily easy. Okay? I don't care how much experience you've got writing these functions. I don't care if you take these examples and start tweaking them. Chances are you're going to end up with a couple infinite loops. All right? Now, the bad part about infinite loops is that you usually don't know that's the problem when you first encounter it. All of a sudden you go, oh, wait, is my CF server down? Oh, wait a second, is my memory usage too high? Do I need to increase my paging file? All right? You usually don't have a clue because it takes a few seconds and you're kind of saying, well, what I did didn't cause any problems, right? So you hit the reload, okay? Trust me, this is what happens, right? And then you wait a couple more seconds, you say, well, all right, maybe I'm still having another problem. You go look somewhere else, and you hit reload a couple more times, okay? And what you got here is multiple infinite loops, which is, I suppose, worse than one. But ultimately, you end up having to, a lot of times, kill your CF server, okay? So this leads to some tips. Everyone read with me the first one. Do it on a development server. Everyone read with me the second one. Do it on a development server. Okay? This is really important. Okay? You may not like what happens to CF server if you're hanging it a lot. Okay? Now, if you're running a developer copy on your PC, you still may not like what happens if you hang CF server, even if you have to restart it. Because it will slow down everything. It'll take you 20 minutes to do what should take 2. Okay? So, plan it. Be careful. The next tip for debugging is to force the function only run once and dump the results. Okay? So when we took a look at the code, if I were to get rid of that, okay, it's not terribly meaningful in this context here, but that's the concept I'm talking about. All right, disable it doing the recursive call, all right, and debug output the content of what was run the first time. That's a great way to debug what's going on. You can also put in your nifty little band-aids, which I know you're not supposed to do, but during development it's necessary. If n is equal to 5, then exit or abort. Okay, these are the types of things you need to do because it'll get out of control if you don't know what's going on. Another example is to generate an HTML table and display the results each time it runs. We're going to see that whenever we look at the directory recursor. And the UCF debugging. Okay, let's take a look at practical example one, unless there's any questions so far. We talked all concept, it's boring, right? But everyone's okay? Let's get to some practical code, shall we? Okay, so the first thing we want to do here is we want to get information back from the database and put it in a combo box, a select box, okay? Wouldn't it be great if we could have it threaded based on the content? So the first thing we'll look at is the database, and we'll see what we got to work with. And so we have a table called categories, or folders, however you want to look at it. And inside there, we've got data that has an ID, and that really we only want to care about. We want to care about the ID, and we want to care about the category name. It's basically the identifier for the category and the label for it, okay? Now, this little thing right here is what we're going to have some fun with, the parent ID. This allows us to do the relationships between the parent and do a hierarchy structure, okay? Has anybody else ever done this before, right? This is pretty straightforward and common for categories, okay? So you've seen this before. How cool would it be for us to have our select box actually organize them properly, all right, even though you didn't create them in the method that they want to show up there, right? That's exactly what we're going to attempt to do. Okay, so let's take a look at some code first of all. And let's look at the old-fashioned way. The old-fashioned way says we're going to do a query of the database. We're going to select the ID and the category name. We're going to order it by category name. Okay, this should look relatively familiar. Then we're going to do our CF output, and we're going to loop over those values. And I threw in a little thing that says if it's selected, you know, then highlight it. Okay? This is old school, right? If there is an old school in CF. Okay, so the plain select box. There it is. Wow. Big deal. We know what that does. All right, and we happen to have the one selected. But this is uninteresting to me, especially because it's all sorted by name. It's not sorted by the parents, which is what I want. So the next thing we do here is we go take a look at the next select box. And you'll see here that we've got the same thing going on here with the form, only instead of looping over anything, we're going to call this function. People know how to use CFX tags, yeah? Good. So we're calling a custom tag called select box. Actually, that should be a select, like that. So here's select box, and let's take a look at that custom tag. So what we've got going on here is we're pulling in data source. This is all semantic because this is information we need as each time we run this function. We're defaulting our parameter for parent, and we're defaulting our parameter for selected. Okay. Now what we're saying is we want to get all children from a starting place. Okay. First of all, I happen to know in the database that the top level item has no parent. Relatively logical, okay? So what we're doing is we're going to do a query. We're going to say select the same information from the categories table, and if the parent is null, then I know that I want to get the record where parent ID is null. Okay, everyone following that? Otherwise, we're going to ask for a specific parent. But let's assume we're going to start from the top here. We're querying just the information where the ID is null. Then we get on here and we're going to output it. We know how to handle it, right? This is the small chunk of the recursive process that we know how to handle. All right, this is the fact. We know that we've got this many records to output, and so we're going to do it. Okay? Now, the next process this is saying, is the problem done? Well, we don't know. Are there any child categories? We don't have any idea. And if there are, we don't know how many. Okay? And so we offload, we delegate that process to another call of the same function. Okay? And that function is calling the same tag, only we're giving it a parent. The parent we're passing in is the current ID we just displayed. This one. Everyone following? So we're passing in the ID of the record that we just output, and now we're going to call another function to say, handle any children of this category. And then we don't have to care about it anymore. Okay? Now, the next time this runs, we're going to give it an ID. It's going to come back up top here. It's going to default our values, and it's going to say, select information from these categories. Attributes parent is not empty. And so it's going to set the parent ID to that value. It's going to get the child values. It's only going to loop over that finite list. And then for each one of them, it's going to do the same thing again and call this next function to retrieve its children. So let's take a look at what that looks like. And if we take a look here, you'll see this is all sorted alphabetically, starting with me. Okay, so now we have the same thing, but now Andrew's not number one. Now documents is, which happens to be the root item in the database. Okay, cool, but it's not very pretty. Okay, we can do something with that to make it a little more intuitive, you know, what's going on here. So we go back to that code, if you want to, of course. Is this interesting? Yeah? Okay. We're going to add some extra stuff in here. First thing we're going to add here is a new attribute called level. Level is going to keep track of how deep we are in the process. Right? When we start out with that top item, we're at level 0. Okay? Each time we go, we want to increase it. We want to keep track of how deep we are in that recursive process, how many iterations we're doing. So now we have that set up. We also have this nifty piece of code that says indent for each level. So we're going to loop from 1 to whatever level we pass in, and we're going to pad it out with some non-breaking spaces. Okay? Everyone following? So level 0, no spaces. Level 1, 3 spaces. Level 2, all right, good. Some people are paying attention. And we're doing that right before we output the name of the category. Right, so we have our option value, we have the label, and we're going to close the option. Right, part of the label is going to be these non-breaking spaces. Here's the other key now. Whenever we call each recursive call, we're going to increment that, so each level knows what's going on. Again, this isn't rocket science here. This is the basic nuts and bolts of what you guys are used to doing. So now we reload this, and ooh, that looks like it might be promising, interesting. Pretty nifty stuff, huh? Now you might ask why I did three spaces. It's because you can barely tell if you only use one. So if you want it more indented, you add more spaces to it. It's going to add three for each one. So pretty cool stuff, all right? And this will make sure that it's from a top level sorted alphabetically, and then each child will be ordered alphabetically accordingly. Okay? Good deal. If you all understand that, we can do something a little more complex. Yeah, you ready for it? Well, we already did that. Directory scanner. Does this interest anyone? Cool. Has anyone ever written one? Okay. So how did you do it? Did you do the loop, you know, CF loop, and you hope that you didn't go too deep in the folder tree? Okay. Let's open up this sample. Actually, let's take a look in here. The files we're going to go through are inside the demo 3 directory. Now, I just threw a bunch of stuff in here so we can use it as an example. So if we start in the demo 3 directory, the concept of what we want to accomplish here is we want to go to each one of these files, we want to read the content and do something with it. Okay? Next, we want to go into subdirectories. So we've got three subdirectories, folder A, B, and C, and so we want to do the same thing to each one of those. There's some files in each one of those. Okay? Now, here's where it gets complex. We want to also go down here. We also want to go down here. Okay? And just for kicks, let's really make it interesting. Can your for loop do this? Okay? Here's where you start to pull out your hair. And you say, okay, well, every week somebody's adding a new subdirectory, all right? And I have to keep modifying my CFML in order to get through down all of those. So we're going to write code that takes care of that for us, nice and simple. Okay. Hold on here. Real quick, some notes on why you would want to build a directory scanner. You probably already know some of these, but anyway, you might want to import files. You might want to monitor them for changes. You might want to provide web access to files that are on disk. Yeah?
This is another place where your client would be a little bigger.
Oh, gotcha. All right. View? You see, everyone learns something here. Is that good enough? More? All right, there's one nod, so I guess everyone's all right with it. Okay, so I'm going to provide web access to files on disk, such as someone says, I've got my file server with all these billions of files. You want to write CF code to help them access those files. Or you might want to scan and read them for search engine indexing. Okay, so all these are good reasons why you want to write a directory scanner and why you don't want to have to care how many subdirectories there are. Like I said, we're going to be doing one directory at a time. We're going to be finding the files and process them. Then we're going to be calling another directory scanner for each child folder. So let's take a look at the CFML code. And I want to remind everyone again that if you go to that blog site, you can download a full copy of all this code. So what we're doing here, this file is not terribly interesting because all we're doing is calling one function call. We set up a table because I'm going to be outputting information to make it useful for us in the demo. And we're calling one CFX file to go and do our work for us. Okay? Now you notice the only thing that I'm submitting here is the starting point. Okay? Which is just like our factorial number, or we give it an 8 and say do something with it. So we're giving it a starting directory, go do something with it. Let's take a look at dir scanner. There it is. Now again, we're talking about methodology. So let's go down to the concept of if you know the problem, solve it, then delegate what you don't know. So the first thing we do is we set up our default variables. If you didn't specify one, then it aborts, right? If you don't know how to handle the problem, you're done. Next thing we do is something that should be familiar, CF directory. All right, what's the starting place? Give me all the files in this directory. It's what we know how to handle at this level. Then we're going to loop over them, and we're going to say, okay, what to do with what type it is. If it's a file, we know how to handle it. And so what we're doing here is we're going to read that file, and then we're going to output a row of information, what we want to know about it, which happens to be the name, what's in the file, and the file content. If you're working with big files, don't use this code, right? This is strictly for demo purposes. And so we want to make sure that that we're outputting information just to know that we handled it, that we touched the file properly, okay? Now, what if it's not a file? What if it's a subdirectory? If it's a subdirectory, we're going to delegate it. And look how easy that is to delegate. All we do is simply say, hey, here's the folder, which happens to be the root folder that we passed in, plus the subfolder that we got from the directory listing. Pretty straightforward, right? And again, at a glance, when you read through this, it should be pretty obvious. Right? It's not terribly difficult if you understand what's going on. And that's it. Not too complex. So if we go and run that code, here's what we got going on. Here's that root directory that we started out with. Yeah. And it's pulling out file 1, file 2, and file 3, 4, and 5. Then it's going to folder A. Then it's going to A's children. Is there a question? No? Then it's going to D's children. And then it rolls back and goes to B again. It's just doing it, hopefully, alphabetically. Then it goes to B's children. Then it goes to that horrific extra folder tree that we threw down there. Okay? I think it skipped one here. That's because that directory happened to have no files in it. Okay? Would that be a breaking point in the loop process, maybe? No files? Oh, I'm done. Right? That's a real easy catch. Easy place to get caught up. So is that of interest to anyone? Is this useful? Pretty straightforward code? Maybe a little bit simpler than what you were doing before. Yeah? Run through that one more time real quick to make sure you understand it. We have a starting place. We're passing in one directory. We're getting a directory of it. Same concept as doing a database query. We get a list of the files that are there. Okay? We're going to loop over them. If it's a file, we handle it. If it's a directory, we delegate it. Very straightforward. Any questions so far? Say that one more time. Oh, CF directory. Actually, it's a good question. I think CF directory just gives you the actual files. Different versions, I think, may have given you the dot dot, which would give you some grief, right? But it's really easy to. And what you should do that I'm not doing here for simplicity is you should make sure that the file you're processing is what you want. Right? So make sure that's a .txt extension or something like that. Okay? Any other questions? Okay. Now, a quick discussion. I know I said it wasn't about performance, but a quick discussion about performance. With an XML walker, we're going to take a look at. So this next demo is a threaded select box. Same thing we're talking about up here, only we're going to do it better. So, why build a better one? If we had XML instead of having to do database queries, that might be faster. Okay? Think about the concept of what we did with that threaded select box. We ran one query against the database, and then for each child, we did another query. So if you have 8 levels, okay, you might do 8 queries for one tree. Right? You're starting to understand why that may or may not be a good idea to do that all the time, okay? If you've got 10 top levels, and each of those have 8 trees, you've got basic math problem, 10 times 8, okay? That many queries. You're going to really hammer the server if you don't know what you're doing. So, in order to build a better threaded select box, I'm suggesting that we do it once and save it as XML. And then we write a recursive function that will walk the XML file instead of the database. Why? Because XML is fast, especially if you're working with a large number of records. Only hit the database when we need to. It is going to be slow the first time in concept because we're going to build that XML file, and it should be nice and fast afterwards. And the larger the list, the more database hits you're going to have, which means this type of a solution is going to be that much more useful. Again, planning. You can write the function once, but do the planning later to make sure you account for performance, scalability, things like that. Now, I'm not talking about page caching here, although that is a very valid solution to that same problem. Anybody use CF Accelerate? No. Nobody here uses CF Accelerate. Well, this is a totally awesome tag you have to download, okay? It's basically a drop-in replacement for CF Cache, only you can wrap it around individual pieces of code. So, for example, I could... this select box right here, I could do... this is rough, but CF Accelerate... okay? I'm not here to advocate somebody else's tag here, all right? All right, that's not what we're talking about. But if you don't use this, you need to look at it, all right? It'll run it once, and it'll store it with a time frame and allow you to recall it multiple times from memory or from disk, all right? And it definitely helps solve some of the issues we're talking about. However, we're getting back to a better example, which is how to plan accordingly for a larger number of sets. So the XML walker, the concept of what we're going to be doing here is... build an XML file the first time that we want to cache this information and then loop over the XML file repeatedly. So the first thing we'll look at is the XML builder. And we got a couple other functions going on here. First of all, it says if the XML file exists, then trash it. Second of all, we're going to call a CFC call. And the function here is to build the XML file. Okay? Is that better? Okay. So we're calling a CFC function to build the XML file. Let's take a look at that CFC. And what you see here is that we're creating a new XML file. People have experience with XML here? Some? Okay. We're creating a new XML file here, and then we're calling this function to get the child folders. Okay? And then when we're done, we return the whole XML file that was created. So let's take a look at the XML get child folders. So what we got going on here is, again, defaulting some parameters. Okay? And now we're going to query for subcategories. This should look very familiar to what we did before. If we're not passing in a parent, then it knows where to start. If we are passing in a parent, it gets to children. Okay? And now we go through the same idea of handling what we know and delegating the rest. So, we know how to handle this by creating an XML node. We're setting the attributes, ID and name. And now we're going to call the same function to get all of its children. Okay? The second time it's going to run, you got it, same concept here. It's going to grab all the children with the specified parent, and it's going to create the same thing here. Now, notice, if you've worked with XML before, what I'm doing here is I'm opening an XML node, then I'm calling the children, and afterwards I'm appending that to its parent. Okay? The idea here is that I'm creating a new node. Any recursive iterations are going to build onto that node, and then when I'm done, I'm appending it to my parent. Okay? So if you're doing it 9 levels, this 9th level generates one with no children, appends to its parent. It generates that information, finishes, goes to its parent, 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 and then you end up with one that's nice, rich, and detailed with what you're looking for. So when we do that, you end up with a file that, when formatted, looks like that. Okay, we got the root item. We got the top-level documents. Its children, and its children, and so on. Okay? So that's what this function does. Now, the actual code to run that is not terribly exciting. It runs and it says done. Nothing really to look at much here. Okay, so now the more important thing is we've got a nifty custom tag that we're going to write here that's going to walk the XML. So let's take a look at the XML walker. Now, when we do the same select box, this looks very similar to the previous one, okay? Only we are doing a new custom tag called XML select box. Let's take a look at that. Okay, so the default parameters that we're passing in here, and tell me if I'm going fast because this got probably complex really quick. We're defaulting parameters, and we're saying that if the XML node is empty, then we know where to start. Okay? We're going to read the XML file that we generated. We're going to parse it, and we're going to set that variable equal to what we read from the file. Okay? Now we know how to loop over that. We're going to loop over the XML children array. For convenience, we're going to set a little variable that says this node is equal to that part of the tree. And we're going to output that option, which happens to be option value equals the ID. And then we're also looking to see if that attribute for selected was passed in, which allows us to pre-select what's in that Dropbox. Okay? Everyone's familiar with the list find thing going on there. We're doing the same thing for indent. Should be familiar by now. Where do you want me to scroll? Oh, over here, you mean? Is that what you're looking for? Okay. And this might help. Yeah, I'm still not following. What? That? Oh, yeah. Like that. Yeah, see, all right. Okay. So we're looping over. We're getting the node. We're going to output the value. We're going to loop and do our padding and output the name. And then again, we're going to do a recursive call to that same function. Okay? What you end up with is the same concept as a select box, only it's going to walk the XML file instead of walking the database, which means you no longer have 80 database hits, which definitely makes a difference. Okay? Now, the concept of where you might apply this is in the event where the categories or the items that we're looping over, maybe they don't change every day. Okay? Maybe it's something that's an infrequent use. And so maybe at the top of this tag, you can say, does the XML file exist? And if it doesn't, maybe then call a function to rebuild it. And likewise, whenever somebody adds a new category, maybe the process would be to delete the file, right? This way, the first time you ever make a hit when it changes, it rebuilds this XML file on the fly, and then you have the XML walker, which will automatically process that, okay? You can also then use the same concept with CF accelerate around those tags, okay? Is this making sense now? Somewhat of value? Okay, where are we for time? All right. So where to go next for recursive functions? I would highly recommend that if you're going to be utilizing this for anything beyond the basic examples that we're looking at here, that you go get yourself a good book on this. Not necessarily because the concepts are going to be different there, but because you'll see a lot of good practical examples. And they're going to be written in other languages most likely because there's not a whole lot of CF stuff for recursive functions. It'd be a good idea to learn some C and some Java to make sure that you can pull stuff up off the net. If you do any searches for recursive functions, you're going to get a lot of stuff. All right. Okay. From what we looked at here, I think that's about what I've got for the material. So questions. Let's talk about some practical applications. Yes. Well, the question was, how about using a cached query in each iteration of the loop? So you'd mean more of like the first threaded example or the XML one, or either really. The challenges you might run into there is that if you're using the same name for your CF query, that you may find that caching it on subsequent hits is going to get the same query. Because really, each time you're doing an iteration, you're doing a different query, right? You're getting different results from the database each iteration. So you're not necessarily going to be able to cache that and get any real benefit thereof, because you really need unique information every time. Okay? The question was, can you do a query and then a query of queries? You certainly can, and that may reduce some of your overhead. Okay. However, the problem you're going to have is you'll have to do a top-level query, which will give you everything. Then you'd have to do a query of that query to get the top-level item, and another query of query to each subsequent one. And if you did the testing, you might find a marginal increase in performance, but you're probably still going to have a lot of memory overhead from doing multiple queries. Okay? Was there a question back there? Yes. Very much so. And the reason because that is because it's reading a text file. It's not doing a database hit. Okay? So there's definitely some memory overhead with doing multiple queries. And like I was talking about, you've got to figure that if you read one XML file, and then we're passing a reference to that XML file the whole way down. So it's really one memory usage we're talking about for reading that XML file. We only ever read it from the disk once. Okay? Whereas if you did it the old method with our select box, we're doing multiple queries for every iteration. And so it definitely adds a performance benefit. Yes? It can be, it's definitely a good idea to use that for something more static, okay? It also depends on how much traffic you're getting. I mean, if you think about the concept of, if you've got a dynamic query and you've got people that are hitting it repeatedly, if you're getting 10 hits a minute, okay? If you're doing all those queries every time, then XML caching is probably going to help out already as a result. But the concept here is that once the information, which is the source, changes, if you rebuild that XML file, then you're only ever reading one file instead of doing database queries every time. The overhead may be higher that very first time, but every subsequent hit's going to be a lot faster. Was there another question over there? Yes. For which one did you want to see? This? Oh, yeah. There you go. Other questions? Anybody have woes from doing recursive functions before? No? That's it? Well, then, I hope this was of value. If you have any other questions or want to take a look at any of these examples more in depth, please. Oh, we do have one more question. Yes. Until I take it off, so probably a long time. I don't really take stuff off very often, so I don't think you have to worry about that. All right. Well, thank you very much for your time. I hope this is of value.
Thank you for listening, and we hope we will see you at CF United 2007. This has been a production by TerraTech Programming. For more information, go to www.cfunited.com.